time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Jeff from the D.C. area.
Shit. I'm Jeff. I'm an addict. Damn, it's way too many people in here. This one. It's way too many people in here, I tell you. Damn. All right, let me get this over with. I'm glad I'm first. Thank y'all for coming. I want to tell that guy he can lock the door. Don't let no more people in. That's enough. Jesus. I really don't know how to spin this particular topic. Hey, Lona, hi. It's just one of those topics that, damn, no drug of choice? What the hell that mean? I don't know. I just got high on whatever they was getting high on at the moment. You know what I mean? I never had a choice of nothing. At 13, I was smoking pot, and at 33, I was smoking crack. The last person that I got high with just walked in the meeting. We're both in our 15th year. And my girl, I'll say this though, I'm glad for the experience of smoking crack. It is definitely one of the reasons why I'm here. It might be the ultimate reason why I'm here. It definitely served a purpose, and I'm grateful that the Creator used my experiences with crack as my vehicle to get here. I was real comfortable smoking PCP and shooting BAM and shooting cocaine and always, you know, drinking something, you know, anything to not have to take a look at me. And at some point, you know, it winds up. My run was a typical 20-year run. 13, I got clean at 33. I'll be 50 in January, and I'll be celebrating my 16th year next Friday. So it's it started in Narcotics Anonymous. I never went to treatment. I never went to a detox other than to do service. I went into the Uptown on April 23rd, 1988. And they sold me on the concept of the program and recovery in about 20 minutes. And I still remember when they had the secretary's report and a guy named Alfonso R. Gave me my first 24-hour chip and the little key tag. And I felt like those contestants on The Price is Right when they say... You know, Jeff G., come on down. Here's your opportunity to get your shit together. And I ran down there and I grabbed that thing, and I really felt that day that I had won something, and my life has not changed since that moment. I'm going to share the struggle with you, you know what I mean? The problem has always been me. And this fellowship, through the aid of some remarkable individuals, my true peers. It starts with my sponsor, who I'm a, you know, I need to say, I humbly apologize for being missing in action for a while, not checking in, but I know where to go when I really need to go. And you know, I've always been guided through service. That's why I've been in all of those places that I never went to while I was using. I've been to all of them clean, taking the message, doing the best I can to show and lead by example. It's not easy. And they said that when I first got here, that the longer you're here, the closer you are to something, you know. And that's true, you know. I physically have never went back to using since the first night at the Uptown. That's a remarkable feat for a guy that's incredibly inconsistent, who a classic underachiever, a guy who knows he don't know, but you could never tell by looking at me. If I didn't tell you, you would never know. And this program has taught me to tell you. And so I just sort of showed up, and you know, I've always connected with people. The Creator just puts people in your life to take you through moments. Because once you put the chemicals down, then you really find out what you're working with. And for me, I'm going to talk about the drugs of choice in recovery. Again, I have none, so I've experimented and tried everything. It seems like, you know, at 13, 14 years old, you know, like everybody in here, I had some early traumatic stuff happen before I even got high that sort of made picking up at 13 sort of like a relief. You know what I mean? I felt like I could connect with the certain crew of people that I wanted to be with, but I was afraid of. You know what I mean? So the drug was like the vehicle that sort of brought us together. A lot of those guys that I started using with in my early days are really no longer around. My best friend is doing like 100 years in jail. He was a user. He was an addict, and he also had a problem with women, and he would rape them. And we did some stuff when I was real young, and he's under a jail somewhere. You know what I'm saying? He was my first best friend, caught up. You know, and it just sort of is gone that way. I'm glad I got here. You know, I'm really glad I got here. When I put the stem down at 33, I remember that person that I eventually got clean with the suggestion that we should maybe put she said, "This is a stop hitting the pipe." I still remember this, Andrea, like it was yesterday. She said, "This stop hitting the pipe, and this is a smoke reefer and drink instead." You know, I had no concept of recovery. I'd never been to a meeting, didn't know anything was going on. And I still remember telling her that, "Baby, I don't know what we're going to do, but if I put the stem down, if I'm going to be successful and I'm picking the stem up again, I'm going to have to put everything down." You know, I instinctively knew then that if I was going to stop that, I was going to have to stop everything. And you all just sort of like reinforced that when I got here. You know, it's about putting it all down first, and, you know, do the best you can to stay here one day at a time. When I was actively using, I was married, and my ex-wife called me day by day Jeff because I really had no concept of life. It was just, you know, finding ways and means to get more on a daily basis, be a pain in her ass, cause chaos and confusion because I'm not comfortable with me. And so I had no problem adjusting, you know, to the fellowship, to the program. I've always been resistant to change. That's why I struggle. I've always been defiant and rebellious. I'm a, you know, recovering Catholic, so I'm always consumed with guilt and shame. And I'm an Aquarian, so I'm a space cadet, which means, you know, see, I know me. I'm clear about me. And what I see in the room right now is about 300 mirrors of me. So I know that what I'm saying, at least five of y'all can relate to it, you know. And then the other 200 of y'all might be in denial. You know what I'm saying? So... It's really been a very adventuresome experience for me. It seems like every 5 years in this program, I pick up new bad habits. I've always been a thief. I've always been dishonest. I was stealing at five. So I have a 45-year history of being a kleptomaniac and a thief. And sometimes I even now, with almost 16 years clean, once in a while I'll still try to take something from somebody that don't belong to me. You know, I'm an addict. One is too many, and 1,000 is never enough. And you can fill in the blank, you know, just chasing money, chasing girls, chasing jobs, chasing food, just chasing, always seeking a thrill. And I think one of the biggest adjustments and one of the biggest struggles that I've had after I did put the chemicals down was the thrill. You know, it just seems like it's so much fun doing stuff wrong. It just seems like it's a little, you know, the folks that are, you know, going to the left where I like to go seem to just be having a little bit more fun than the folks that are walking the straight and narrow over here. And I always have struggled with, you know, staying over here or staying over there. It's always been a problem with me, you know what I mean? But God in his infinite wisdom do his thing with me. I ain't got no say-so in nothing. You know, I'm powerless over everything. The only thing that I can do is promote a choice, make a decision. I can't even dictate the outcome of the decisions and choices I make sometimes, you know. And I hate that shit. I hate it, you know. When I see my children, I got a couple of kids. One is 23 and my little son is 8. And when I see in them and what I see is that they both feel entitled. They feel a sense of entitlement. You know, it's their world. I want what I want when I want it. They're probably, you know, we're probably keeping seats warm for them now. And the truth is that what I saw was, what I see in my kids is just me. I feel the same way. I'm entitled. The rules don't apply to me. I'll do what I want to do when I want to do it. To hell with principles. To hell with this. To hell with the program. You know, my attitude is probably the thing that in the beginning kind of kept me focused for a while, because it's the only thing that really has changed over the years. It's just my attitude. You know, I still, you know, let my thoughts dictate and govern the moves I make. I don't really run it by anybody. I try to find the people that will probably co-sign it first, you know. So I'm always in something. I'm always in something. But I know that I feel it. I feel it. And I feel that I sort of give a light off and I attract people. You know, I'm pretty, I mean, I'm a phony, fake, and a fraud most of the time, for real. But I don't act that way. I sort of give off a nice little presence about me and people, you know, like me. And I struggle with the fact that everybody likes me and shit. It's about 5 people at the convention now that probably won't speak to me about some shit I did, you know, when I'm tripping. You know, I mean, I done pissed 5 people off, and I see them, and I want to say something, but I'm petty. You know, they petty, and you forget what, you know. Isn't it about 2 or 3 people that all of you know that you're mad at right now about something? I haven't spoken to my daughter, and I haven't said 2 sentences to her in about 1.5 years about renting her a car and her not turning the damn thing in for a month. All I want her to do, I had to pay like $700 because she kept the car and did. She pulled a Jeff move on me. She pulled, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm being dishonest. I'm promoting this. I should have told her no. No, you're going to have to do this yourself. But I want to, you know, be liked by you. I really feel I owe you something for some shit I did 100 years ago. I'm still guilty about, you know, not being there when you were 2. And you 22 now, you know, come on. And she kept the car, you know, and I didn't know. I went out of town, came back and called. People said, we're about to report the car stolen. And I called her up and she went down to Fredericksburg at Geico and training. And I was like, hey, so what's up with the car, man? And she like, well, you can just, you know, she tried to do one of my moves, just blow it off like it wasn't no big deal, right? These people great locked me up. I said, my little credit card on there, you know, I got bad credit and all this drama and everything. You know, they looking for me, they ain't looking for you. And then I called out her name, right? I said, dang, this little bitch. Got in the car, went to Fredericksburg, grabbed grabbed an old acquaintance going down, heading down, and found her, found a car, just said, give me the car, give me the keys. And all I want from her is to say, I'm sorry, Dad, for what happened. I don't want no money. You know, she mad at me because I went and got the car. You know, see me, you know, what you mad at me for? I want you to just take ownership for what you did. That's what Sandra taught me. When I used to whine about them jobs and, man, they fired me again. And she just said straight up, nigga, you don't like to work, you know. You know, you don't like to work. So I said, okay, I got two jobs and worked and money here and there, you know, all kind of crazy stuff. Chasing. One is too many thousands, not never enough or whatever you want to put in that blank. And greedy. I mean, I just, you know, gone, man, gone. Still clean, though. Crazy, you know. And, again, I know I'm not the only one that this probably you can relate to this, you know. But my kid has yet to call me and say, Dad, I'm sorry. That's all. And until you take ownership, I ain't got nothing to say. Because as soon as I see you, even though I told her I ain't mad at her, she's still got the nerve to be mad at me. What the fuck you mad at me for? You ain't got to give me $500 for the car. I ate the $500, you know. My other drug of choice was, I've never been able to, ever since I was married in the, I think the last day I was with my wife was Independence Day, 1985. We got in a fight. My daughter was 4 years old. She put me out. I thought I was free. And that's when my bottom started. Because I thought I was free. I was out of that crazy marriage from that woman. You know, y'all laugh, but I thought I was ready. Then I remember 4th of July, 1985, taking a six-pack of Old English 800, a joint of weed, went down to the monument to see the fireworks, kicked back on the grass, half a million people down there. And when I woke up, everybody was gone. The people were sweeping up. Somebody stole my little ring, and I had a little cheesy watch on. You know, it ain't like now, but you know, they took my watch. I had $5 bill in my pocket. They took it out of my pocket, and I'm laying there. That happened to me two or three times. Right? You know what I mean? So somebody was telling me then that I need to probably surrender the whole idea of using drugs. It's over. You know. In the bottom, up on Mount Pleasant Place with the Hispanics and the refugees from wherever they come from, those folks would pass out in our yard, wouldn't they? They'd be drunk and just fall out of Mill Street. Boom. They in the yard, and I'm right there with them. You know what I mean? I'm right there with them. I'm like, damn, is this how it gets? That was it. It was over. I knew it was over. The last night I got high, I knew that was going to be the last night it was over. You know what I mean? The girl at Time Life brought in the good coke, and we hit a little bit, and I ran out to the office and haul ass and got in the cab and went over to 14th Street, copped, ducking Andrea, you know, I'm leaving hits on the table, running around trying to get high in the alleys and all that. And in the back of my mind, all I'm saying is, this thing coming to a merciful end. I knew it was over. When I laid down that night, that was the night I surrendered. Didn't know it. And I said to myself, that's it. I knew it was over. The next day, I went into the uptown and officially surrendered. Walked down there and saw five or six people in the room that I knew from those eras that I was using in. And it was so, you know, your first meeting. You know, come on. You know, who can forget their first meeting? They told me, don't forget the last night I used. And if you can remember the first time you came in here, you know, things might work out for you. I've been incredibly blessed. I've almost died in here twice. My appendix ruptured in 91 because I don't take care of myself. I have issues with everything. You know what I mean? I'm a diabetic, but I'll eat sweets all day long. Everybody who knows me knows that. I had renal failure in 1995 because I wouldn't put the drugs down clean. You know what I mean? Still eating stuff, acting like I'm normal, because that's my burning desire in life, is to be normal, just a normal guy. You know, that's why I take breaks from the program. I'm tired of like this whole thing, how to work on yourself and the steps and talking to your sponsor and the meetings. And my family be like, you still go to meetings? Yeah. You notice I haven't stole nothing out your house since I've been gone. I have not been locked up since I stopped using. Do you guys know how it's been since I stopped? Have you recognized? I got a fixed address for 10 years. You know what I'm saying? All my stuff is paid. You know, and that's a result of not using no more. That's the result of this. You know, I could be doing a lot better than I'm doing, and I could be doing a lot worse than I'm doing. You know, this is a powerful program. And it's a program that you have to just be diligent about. You can't be like me. You can't be lazy. You can't take breaks. You know, you can't get complacent. You can't get too comfortable. Because somewhere in the back is that thing. And that thing don't chill. That thing takes no breaks. You know, when I used to go into rehabs, we used to take the meetings into the detox and DC jail and Lawton and all these places, PI, and they have the little stuff on the board where they write out. I learned about my disease reading the blackboard in some of those places, taking the service commitments. And they would leave little notes in there about the disease doing push-ups and it's 100 of y'all in here and only 2 of y'all going to make it and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I would always sit up and say, well, damn, I'm probably going to be one of the 98 that won't make it. But you guys said, well, won't you just make a decision to be one of the 2 that do? You know, it's your choice. And so I'm still here. It's not over. It's not over. I really wish that, you know, 16, I could just ride off into the sunset. We always talk about that, riding off into the sunset. Sandra said, your ass going to fall off the horse at the corner. You know, so what she invited me to do was last year we connected and did the convention here. You know, she took a risk and hosted. Some kind of way I got in to be the program chair because of some situations that happened. And we pulled it off. You know, the family, we handled our business. This was one of the most successful conventions now in the country. And every time the D.C. area hosts, we sets it off. Okay? We sets it off. And it's probably the same 25 or 30 people who show up and pull this thing off. It's like 5,000 people here. This is the joint now. And when it ended, I felt so drained and God, I was, now what do we do? You know what I'm saying? So I took a break. I stopped coming to meetings. I just chilled. I mean, you know, I wanted to rest on my laurels. And then I lost my mind again, you know. driving other people crazy, you know. So what I realized what I need to do is recommit to recovery. Because I can go out just like a lot of people go out. And my disease don't give a rat's ass about how much time I got. My disease got more time than I do. And my disease does what it does. It kicks ass. It takes no prisoners. It takes names. And once in a while, it lines me up and kicks me right in mind. You know, I'm grateful that I learned through Sandra and some other people not to get up here and perpetrate and hide behind time. Because you can get up here with 10, 15 years and talk, you know, and bullshit people, but you still got to sit down and think about what you said. So I'm just going to tell y'all what's up. You know, I'm just a believer in current events. This is what's happening right now. I'm trying to recommit to recovery. I'm coming back. You know what I mean? I really never leave. You know, but seeing the folks I've seen this weekend, who I also thought might have been on break, you know, folks just move on. You know, people are prospering. They're doing well. They're moving out of the area. Everybody ain't in the little same box we were in. You know, folks are just growing. The program teaches you to do some shit with your life, and people are doing it, you know. And I need to, like, be a little more kinder to myself and take a little better care of myself and try to be a little nicer to some of those people who stood up for me. And they know who they are. There's some folks in here who really stood up and helped me, particularly in the last year. I've really been tripping, you know. I'm glad I didn't cop, but I'm starting to tell people I want to use, you know. And once you put that in the atmosphere, look out, you know, be careful what you ask for. Don't put that stuff out there. My son's mother said, don't put that negativity out there in the air, because it might happen. You know, so you need to get to the exact nature of what's up with you and do something about it, you know, because you're in trouble. And an addict alone is always in trouble, you know. And that isolation piece that I was on, where my drug of choice was my bed and my futon and my big TV and my DVDs, and, you know, I wouldn't come out the house. And that's not me. That's not my character. You know what I mean? I always show up. Whether I'm fucking up or not, I show up, you know, and tell y'all what's happening. So I don't know. I hope somebody can relate. Thank you all for being here. And I'm going to sit my ass down. Thank you.
Sheila is our next speaker from the Montgomery area.
Hi, everybody. My name is Sheila, and I'm an addict. And I want to thank the God of my understanding, who is loving and caring and compassionate and a forgiving God. I also want to thank Tri-County, you know, for seeing something in me, you know, enough to ask me to come up here and share my experience, strength, and hope. And I also want to thank my sponsor and my sponsees and my network of people, you know, because that's how this program works, you know, with us sharing our experience, strength, and hope. And I know when I told my sponsor, I said that they called me and asked me when I speak at the convention. And she said, well, what time? And I said, it's 1:30 on Saturday. And she said, oh, girl, that's prime time. And I said, what's prime time? She said, everybody's going to be there. I was like, oh, my God. You know, you know, I want to share about where I came from. And where I came from, before I even started using any drugs, there was a lot of things going on. You know, there was a detachment disorder going on. You know, there was some abandonment issues. There was a lot of fear, you know, and I didn't know anything about any of those things. You know, caretaking started at a real early age. You know, seeking approval and acceptance started at a real early age, you know, and you know, all through all the traumatic experiences, because I am a survivor of children that were sexually molested, you know, and I've been a battered wife, you know, and that's where I came from. Before I even picked up any drugs, all these things was going on, you know, the caretaking issues, you know, having to leave my mother at the age of 6 and not knowing where I was going and going with these people that I had never seen before and seeing my dad, who I'd only met 2 times. And I was real afraid, real scared, and I believe I shut down at that time. You know, the fear started a long time ago. And, you know, coming up here in D.C., to a world of chaos and confusion and conflict, because that's what I was faced with. And the shame started a long time ago, even before I even picked up any drugs. You know, the guilt started a long time ago. But I wasn't aware of these things, you know. When I was introduced to drugs, you know, I mean, that became the thing. I always used to feel not a part of. So when I was introduced to drugs, boy, that made me feel like I could dance, I could talk, I could be all these people, you know, because I'm talking about the many masks that we learn to wear. And, you know, when we started using, you know, it just gave me a good feeling. It made me feel different, you know. It took away the shame. You know, and I remember being in the 8th grade and wearing a coat all the time because I was ashamed of my body, you know, because it had been violated so much. You know, and I grew up thinking, you know, that I was supposed to please men, you know. That's how it started out, you know. And so my thing was pleasing men. And what I looked for in a man was him being a provider, you know, and meeting all my needs because he was supposed to take care of me, you know. So when I took those drugs, you know, and of course you all know that my addiction It became worse and worse and worse. And I know in the readings, you know, it reads about we're not interested, you know, in how much that we use, you know, or what we used, you know, or where our connections come from, you know. The main purpose is trying to find out your problem and how we can help you, you know, and how we help is sharing our experience, strength, and hope, you know. Anyway, I was off to the races. You know, I used and I used and I used. And when they gave me the topic, no drug of choice, I was like, what do they mean? You know, and when I called the sister, Teresa, she said, well, what does it mean to you? You know, and then I called my sponsor. I called my sponsor first, you know, and she said, well, call the programmer so that you can find out, you know. And they told me to read, what is the Narcotics Anonymous program? You know, this program is just awesome. You know, when I, after using and just, you know, the drugs just enhanced all of my behaviors. You know, I always look for something on the outside to make me feel good on the inside, you know, because I was unwilling, you know, to do some work. I didn't know how to do any work. You know, I was caught up in a whole lot of pain. You know, I was caught up in a whole lot of illusions, that's what we call them, you know, that I learned to build up, you know, in order to live in, not facing reality, you know, escaping, you know. And so those drugs, they really did something for me, and it didn't matter about what I used. I used anything and everything in my addiction, you know, anything that it took just to change what was going on in the inside. You know, so when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I remember going to the meeting in 1992. And I remember going into the meeting with paraphernalia in my wallet, you know, and the readings, it talks about us taking the paraphernalia and the drugs outside of the room and come back in for a message of hope, you know. And I remember not being able to sit still and wait for the meeting to be over because I wanted to use. And then, you know, in 1995, because of course I went back out, you know, I wasn't ready. You know, I went back out and I stayed out there for about 2.5 years. In 1995 of January, I went back into a treatment facility. By this time, I was staying in Southeast D.C. in Berry Farms. There was a bed rail up against my door. My kids, I had 5 of them. And they all had to be separated in different homes. You know, I really felt like I had nothing to live for. You know, and of course I was receiving food stamps and I was on welfare, you know, and I told the social worker, I said, well, when I get these food stamps, you know, I'm gonna bring them and I'm gonna split them up between the families and, you know, so you all can get food for the children and, you know, and things like that. But of course you all know what I did, you know. Before I even received the food stamps, they was already ticked out to the drug man, you know. So they were already gone. You know, I remember always saying that I was going to never shoot no dope, you know, and in the end, I remember, and I was married at the time, and my ex-husband, he, you know, he ended up shooting me with some dope in my arm, and he wasn't responsible for it, but I blamed him for it for a long time, and I was in there saying, go ahead, I'm going to die, you know, go ahead, you know, and he shot me up. You know, and it was the best feeling that I could feel. I liked it, but it scared me. You know, so after going to a treatment facility in Florida, California, a geographical change, you know, I did everything that they told me to do and what they wanted me to do because, like I said, we learn how to wear those masks real good and we can adjust, you know. And being there, I wanted to help everybody else. You know, because it wasn't about me. I wasn't important, you know. And then, you know, still being married and my ex-husband, I'm divorced now, and I've been divorced for 4 years. And he introduced me to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And he introduced me to a lot of people, you know. And being in that treatment facility, you know, I ended up getting in touch with a lot of, you know, issues. You know, they had me to write letters, which is therapeutic. You know, to my abuser, You know, they took me through psychotherapy, you know, so that I could get in touch with the inner child that had stopped growing, you know, and that had been hurt for a real long time, you know, and it was real traumatic, and there was no trust, and I thought that I didn't trust anybody else, but it was me that I didn't trust. You know, because I thought everybody else was conniving and treacherous. You know what I mean? But I didn't want to look at how conniving and treacherous I was. You know, so being in California and Florida and coming back out after 90 days of being clean, I went into a transitional shelter. I ended up getting pregnant with my sixth child, and they told me I had to leave. You all told me to change people, places, and things. You know, up in my head, you know, my disease. Because I'm my disease up here with this distorted thinking that goes on. You know, I ended up back in people, places, and things. You know, and it was a reservation that was long made, you know, because we mentally relapse before we even pick up. You know, and I ended up getting back to people, places, and things. They say our disease is very cunning, baffling, tricky, powerful, you know, very insidious. And I stayed out there for a month and a half, pregnant with my sixth child. And I did everything that I was doing before. I didn't relapse. I picked back up where I left off at. So I sold the jewelry within an hour. I was tricking within an hour and doing everything I had to do to use one more time. You know, I remember going up to these and they said, "No, girl, look how good you look. We're not giving you any." I was like, "Girl, you ain't know. I've been using for about a month. I hadn't used anything. They gave me a crumb. A crumb, and I was back off to the races. You know, when we use, we lose, you know. And I stayed out there for a month and a half, and then I went to New York to Canosa Lake, and I stayed there for a month helping everybody else. And when they asked me what could they help me with, you know, I just broke down and I started crying, you know, and that's when I really, really surrendered, you know, because this program is about surrender, surrendering. And not just in the first step, you know. But I'm talking about me having to learn to surrender every day and not run on self-will, run riot. You know, this program is about humility and being a service, you know. And I didn't learn these things. I had to unlearn to relearn. You all taught me these things. You know, I thought that I could get clean, you know, by myself. But I just couldn't stay stopped. You know, I used to hide the stuff in the closet and, you know, and in a bag full of dirty clothes. I had about 20 bags of dirty clothes, right? Never washed clothes, you know. And every time I took a hit, I would throw the pipe in the closet, you know. And then it got to the point where I was hiding in the closet, you know. And my brother came in the house, and the bed relevant was against the door. And when he opened the closet door, he said, "What the hell is going on?" And I said, "Shh." You know, man, so in October the 14th of 1995, coming from Canosa Lake, they told me not to make any stops, you know, and I ended up coming back to D.C. to Safe Haven, to a transitional shelter for women on East Capitol Street in Southeast D.C., and they used to put me in the hot seat all the time, too, you know, because I never wanted to look at my issues, you know. I like to hide out. I like to escape, you know. And they used to put me in the hot seat all the time. And I used to cry and cry. And then I had to ask permission for my husband to go to the clinic with me. I was pregnant, right? I had to ask for permission for him to go to the clinic with me. And I didn't want to do that because I don't like authority, you know. And God just has a way of humbling us, you know. I had to ask for permission. You know, they had to manage my money. You know, in the first step, it says that we admitted that we're powerless over our addiction. And our lives have become unmanageable. You know. And boy, I just thought I had some control and some power. you know. And where the power came from was the sex, the men, because I thought I could change them. Give them a little bit, you know. They're going to do what I want them to do, you know. All I got to do is knock their boots, you know. It's going to be all right, you know. Money, you know, motivated, you know. And so when I came to the program of Narcotics Anonymous and you people, boy, the unity in this fellowship, you know, and this thing is nationwide. I have a network of people, beautiful, wonderful people, with all kinds of qualities and gifts and talents. You know, and when I don't want to see me, and when I'm unwilling to do some work on me, guess what? God put somebody in front of me, a mirror just like me. You know, just like me, you know. And I want to point out all your flaws, because that's what I'll do. Point out all your flaws, because I'm not willing to look at me. You know, after this treatment facility in this transitional home, you know, I ended up leaving. And since then, October the 14th, 1995, I haven't found it necessary to use. And what I'm talking about, mood-altering substances. You know, let me get that straight, okay? You know, because that's in my addiction. Let me talk about recovery now, okay? Because after the drugs was gone, and I thought it was going to be peaches and cream, you know, but y'all told me it was life on life terms. So what do? You know, when you're being beat, what do? You know, when you verbally abused. I didn't know how to move away from that abuse. I stayed in it because I was used to it, you know. And you people told me to remove yourself, go to another room, take a walk, you know. And I had to learn how to do things like that. It took a lot of courage for me to take a stand, you know, because there was no self-worth and no self-esteem, you know, for me to take a stand and have my ex-husband removed from his house. That he used to always tell me to get to stepping, you know. But I used to do that to him, you know, because what we do to people and what we give out, we get it back, you know. And it took a lot for me to take a stand, you know, and stand up on my own, you know, because it was about him and his recovery. I followed and chased his recovery. I followed and chased his network. He told me I was a network thief, right? You know, and then he used to tell me little things like, well, when you share, don't forget to tell him about that dress you had on for 5 days. I said, I only had it on for 3 days, you know. But I had it on for 5 days, y'all. You know, I did. You know, but the program of Narcotics Anonymous is just awesome. You know, the newcomer is the most important person. You know, and the way that we give is by sharing our experience, strength, and hope with one another. You know, thank God for being human, you know. And thank God that this is a program of progress, not perfection. You know, because perfection and all those character defects, when they're out of balance, we're just like off the hook. But what do, you know, when the husband leaves? You know, and I ended up getting my kids back after 2.5 years. We ended up getting a 5-bedroom house in PG County, you know. And I wanted the white picket fence, you know, and I wanted the marriage to go well. We went to marriage counseling. You know, I said, I'm just going to put everything in the back of me, you know, and we're going to start anew, you know. But I didn't know that I wanted to continue to suppress and push down, because that's what I learned to do, you know, and hide out. In a room full of people, isolation, denial, you know, layers and layers and layers and layers of denial, you know. And when he ended up leaving, I couldn't handle the mortgage and I couldn't handle the bills. I had a job and it was paying me about $6.50 an hour. You know, I was stealing because I was receiving 3 checks and wasn't even supposed to be receiving. And this is in recovery, okay? And those are the kind of things that I use, you know. And I'm talking about using people. And I'm talking about using money. because that gives me an adrenaline rush. How about y'all? You know. You know, I'm talking about shopping. You know. I'm talking about eating, waking up 3 o'clock in the morning, not even hungry and eating. You know. you all said no drug of choice. So what about no drug of choice in recovery? You know. Excuse me. You know, so after my husband left and the electricity got turned off, I felt like I was using again. I was still going to meetings. I was still reaching out. I was using the telephone, and you all told me to get a sponsor. I burned my sponsor's phone up. And my network of people, I called them. I mean, we talked for hours, you know. And I had to call somebody, and when I couldn't get to the exact nature of what was going on with me, you know, or I couldn't identify what I was feeling, you know, I would call him and I would go around the Miracle Bush. So thank God for my sponsor doing my fifth step with me. Because then she said, well, now we can get to the exact nature, you know. You know, so we ended up moving. But through the grace of God, I was in therapy because I do get outside help. And the therapist suggested that I go to Montgomery County. And she told me to go and apply, you know, for housing. And I did. Within a year, I was calling the senator's office in D.C., the chairman's office, you know, because I learned how to reach out for some help and find some resources. You know, I'm talking about living in the solution and not the problem. You know, I'm talking about sitting in what you're going through, feeling what you're feeling, you know, and getting through it. Not going around it, up over it, and up under it, because we know how to do that real well. I learned how to do that real well. You know, and learning how to sit with self. I never knew how to sit with self because I was used to the chaos and the confusion and the conflict. Matter of fact, they told me I was a drama queen. You know, my sponsor them used to tell me that, and I used to say, you really think so? You know, you know, because I can get real self-righteous at times, you know, and I didn't see that. But when I was able to take a look at me, you know, because she used to always say, to thine own self be true. And I never knew how to do that, but you people taught me. And the freedom from the steps taught me. Being a service, listening to you all share your experience, strength, and hope. Going through my own experiences, you know, and I mean going through them, you know, because I know how to cover up real good. You know, this program is just so awesome. I just love being clean. It's nothing like it. Nothing like it. You know, so, you know, going and being in a fetal position and crying and, you know, and hugging myself. You know, I was always the person that, you know, I'm strong. I can handle it. I know what to do, you know, because I suffer from this know-it-allism, you know. And I found out through this process that I don't have all the answers, that I don't know what to do. You know, I didn't want you all to know that I was insecure, you know, or I was emotional, you know, but I'm a sensitive person, you know. I didn't want you all to know that I can beat myself up worse than you all can, you know, and how it's so much easier to blame somebody else or volunteering to be the victim. You know, I volunteered to be the victim so many times. You know, I'm talking about creating scenes for ourselves, you know, and blaming somebody else. You know, so thank God for being human and going through the process, you know, because it's okay to feel what we feel. It's okay to think what we think. Doesn't mean we have to act on it, because I'm going to tell you, I have been wanting to act out. I told my sponsors this morning, I want to act out. A thought is a thought and a feeling is a feeling. That does not mean I have to act out on it. You know, because am I looking at the consequences? Because it's consequences, whether good, bad, or indifferent. You know, but what do I do, you know, when I'm hurting? Say no drug of choice, you know, and then I hurt somebody else. Because hurt people, you know. And when I'm hurting, I don't see anything. I'm blinded, you know. And through the grace of God, you people walking me through, talking me through, holding me and hugging me, us hugging one another, you know, the unity, you know, Sharon and I experience strength and hope that whatever you're going through, you don't have to go through it alone. You don't have to be by yourself, you know, so you people, beautiful, wonderful people, man, God is so good. He is so awesome. He changes me in spite of myself. You know, when we are resistant to change, that's when all the trouble comes in. You know, the self-will run riot, you know, running on self-will. But then when you get by yourself, what do? Can you sit with yourself? I remember not being able to sit with myself. You know, sitting on my back porch. You know, I live in Montgomery County. You know, I have 3 children at home, but I have 6 altogether. You know, and sitting back there with my legs crossed. All my needs are met. Have just about everything I want, you know. But I'm sitting back there, but I'm sad. Why am I sad? Happiness starts within, you know. And people can't make you happy. You can enhance my happiness. You know, we can enhance one another's happiness. You know, but sitting back there sad and not being able to sit in the quiet and the peace, you know, because I'm so used to the conflict and confusion. So let me, if I don't start drama with you, let me start some drama with inside of myself, you know. And I'm talking about some emotional pain that we do to ourselves, some mental stuff that we do to ourselves when we beat ourselves up and we don't want nobody to know. You know, they say we more alike than different, you know. Use it is just not an option, no matter what. You know, I have a 14-year-old daughter, you know, and no drug of choice. What do I do? Because you know what? I have no control over her, and she's out of control. She's been gone for about a month, you know, losing my job. What do you do? No drug of choice. You know, I went through anger. I went through fear. And all of that, you know, but you people gave me some hope. And you all told me things like God has something else better for you, you know. Through the steps is where we gain our freedom, you know. And sharing our experience of hope because we get an opportunity through the challenges and opportunities that confront us. Unresolved issues that we need to deal with. Lots of times it's covered up. Looking for love in all the wrong places. So what you gonna do, Sheila? You gonna act out on your lust issues? What you gonna get? You know? What you gonna get? You know? Some pain. That's what you gonna get. You know? I'm talking about paying a high price for a cheap thrill. Just for a moment. Just for a moment. Just to make me feel good for a minute. You know? This program is just awesome, y'all. I dare anybody to try it. You know, I utilize my sponsor. I work with my sponsees. I'm in service work. I do service. I give it back. That's what you all taught me, that we have to give it back because we won't be able to keep it unless we give it back. You know, and we can give it back in more than one way. Not in just in Narcotics Anonymous, but I'm talking about on the outside of Narcotics Anonymous, in our homes, in the society, you know, because we are a nonprofit society of men and women. We're a fellowship, you know, of men and women whom drugs have became a major problem. We find out, you know, through this program of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, that we do recover and we can recover together. We don't have to do it alone. So I just want to thank Tri-County once again, and I want to thank the God of my understanding, and I want to thank you all for allowing me to serve.
I'm an addict named Pat. We have, is there anyone who'd like to share? We have room for maybe one quick share before we close out the meeting. Okay, I'd like to thank Jeff and Sheila for sharing. Could we have a moment of silence?